taking a look at anger on the show now, and you kind of know that feeling. Maybe your blood boils a little bit. Maybe you see some red. And it's not a circumstance that you want to be in all the time, for sure. But our next guest says being mad isn't always a bad thing. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk about anger and how we can manage it in healthy ways with our guest, Ryan Martin. He is a professor of psychology, associate dean for the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW Green Bay. And his recent books explore why people become angry, how people can use their anger in productive ways, and how to work effectively with angry people. And he also hosts a popular psychology podcast, which is titled Psychology and Stuff. And so it's great to have him with us, and I hope you'll join in. When was the last time you were angry? What made you get mad? How'd you manage your anger? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Professor Ryan Martin, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So how do you define anger?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm glad we're starting there. Anger, I think anger actually gets a bad rap. And part of the reason it gets a bad rap is because people sometimes start out by defining it incorrectly. So anger is just the emotional feeling state. It's not the behaviors oftentimes associated with it. Those are of course relevant and related, and we should talk about those. But it's just the psychological experience of that comes from being provoked in some way, having your goals blocked, being treated poorly. And it's associated with a desire to lash out and potentially harm someone. But that doesn't necessarily mean you act on that desire to lash out. There are lots of ways to express anger, and that type of what we call aggression, where you hurt someone, is just one way, and it's not even the most common way.
So how does it relate to emotions like, let's say, animosity or maybe hostility?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that, because I think that a lot of what we see right now in the United States in particular feels like, yeah, there's an anger problem there, but there's also what I would call an animosity problem, which is maybe separate but related to that. And so, I think when we think about animosity or hostility, we sometimes think of those as being attitudes instead of emotions. And so animosity is an attitude that's associated with sort of a lack of trust for other people, a frustration with other people, a dislike or a lack of trust for other people. And I think that that attitude does seem very, very present right now in the United States. And that attitude does feel like it's informing people's anger and frustration, that they're maybe jumping to the worst possible conclusion about the people they interact with day in and day out. You know, so car in front of me driving slower than I want them to. And instead of having patience for that person, I might get angry, and that anger might stem from the fact that I'm just really frustrated with other people these days, right? I find them to be difficult to deal with, untrustworthy, have goals that are incongruent with my goals, and so on.
Tim in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Tim, hi.
Well, hi, Larry. This is the first time I've ever called in.
What's on your mind?
Well, you guys are talking about anger, and that is something that's very, very common and usual for me. I am angry every day, and not just a little bit brewing under the collar. You know, I have blowups, like a lot, and I know where it comes from. I have high standards in everything that I do. But the big thing is I look around the world at me at the things that I have always loved, like especially the outdoor environment, and even the way people used to be, friendlier, more willing to take a moment, more aware, more accountable for their actions and the words they say. All of this I took for granted as a kid, and it's just gone or disappearing now.
As you get older. Yeah. Yeah. Tim, thanks for that, for your comment. Ryan, a comment from you.
Yeah, a couple things. I think one of the first things I'd say is Tim is not an outlier when it comes to how frequently he's getting angry. In fact, about half of people say they get angry a couple times a day to at least once a day. And so now it could be that he's an outlier with regard to the intensity. And so there's different ways of thinking about the frequency with which we get angry, right? There's just a frequency count, which is like, how often is it happening? But there's also an intensity element there, meaning how angry am I getting in a particular moment? And he alluded to the fact that he might get a little angrier than other people. And so, normal with regard to the frequency, not sure where he's at with regard to the other piece. I think, though, that what I really like about that caller's comments is it really reveals how anger can come sometimes from very surface level things like, hey, the person in front of me is walking too slow, or my printer won't work and it's supposed to relatively deep things like what the caller's describing, things I used to care about, or things that I took for granted earlier in life, things that are really, really, really important to me. And it seems like other people don't care about those things. That's coming from a deeper place than just that sort of surface level frustration that we all feel. And it also reveals too that in a lot of cases, anger isn't, it can be motivated by really positive, important things. I mean, the caller made reference to valuing and caring about the environment. I mean, that's a really important thing that this caller values, and the anger is stemming from that. For many people, it comes from a love or a support of justice. And when they see or witness injustice, they get angry. That's not a bad thing, right? Justice is a good thing. And so anger can really come from important and good places.
So is this a kind of thing that we should, okay, I got to work on not being angry all the time?
No, I think the way to deal with anger is less about how often you are getting angry and more about why you're getting angry, what impact that anger is having on you, and what you're doing with that anger. And so what I mean is, if you find yourself getting angry, and maybe it's not for the best reasons, maybe that anger is actually coming more from a place of making like dictatorial demands of other people, or having these, it's maybe good to have high expectations, but if your expectations are so high and you haven't made them clear to other people, then that's an issue, right? You might need to think mm-hmm. about what anger you're experiencing for that reason. But also think about what your anger is doing to you. Is it causing you health problems or relationship problems? Is it meaning that you're not driving very well, or you're drinking too much alcohol or engaging in other unhealthy practices? That's a time when you need to think about how you're dealing with your anger. And then finally, and it's related to that last piece, but what you are doing when you're angry. Do you go sit in your room and cry, which is common? Do you break things, which is relatively common? If you're doing things like that, again, it's related to that. Is it having a negative effect on you? But thinking about those things, that's the key to having a better relationship with your anger and understanding how to manage it.
Tim, thanks again. Mike in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. Anger is an important part of my personal life, and I work hard to try and understand good versus bad anger. And one of my theories is I wish people were more angry at the right things. That often anger gets a bad rap. But my question, and for your guests to speak a little more about, would be the difference between the irrationality of anger and the rationality of something, as he was mentioning about justice, the rationality of injustice and how people behave in response to the irrational and the rational.
Hmm.
Yeah, really interesting question. And I'm going to start with something the caller said at the beginning there about, you know, being, I agree with the caller that it's, you want to see people angry over the right things. That's where we agree. I think where we run into problems, though, is a question. And I think this is sort of built into the second half of his question, which is, what do we mean by the right things, right? And how do we define the right things? And because you see instances where people might be really, really angry, but, you know, you've got good reason to think that at the core of that anger is a misunderstanding, right? They're really upset about what they perceive as an injustice, but that maybe wasn't necessarily an actual injustice. And so those are that's kind of the challenge there, is that sometimes that emotion isn't coming from a really rational or accurate or reasonable place. It's coming from misinformation. It's coming from, you know, inaccurate beliefs or inaccurate expectations. I think the goal sometimes around, if we go back to this idea that people need to be or should be angry about the right things, is we've got to figure out in some way, when is that anger coming from a accurate portrayal or accurate picture of what's happening? When is that anger coming from, stemming from something that is not misinformation and so on? And I think that's really what has to drive some of this, because yeah, you see people angry and you realize that the core of that is just something irrational or something unreasonable.
Mike, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ryan Martin, our guest today, Professor Ryan, professor of psychology and an associate dean for the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW Green Bay. And he's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk about anger with him. Clay and Verona, maybe you can hang on. You can join in, too, if you'd like, with your own comment or question. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back with Ryan Martin. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we talk about managing your anger in healthy ways with our guest, Ryan Martin. He is a professor of psychology and dean for the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW Green Bay. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. Our lines are all filled, so I think we'll go right to the phones and Clay and Verona first. Clay, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I had a comment that related to anger. I am an over-the-road truck driver, and I also do some safety training. And one of the first things I tell new drivers is that if you put a D in front of the word anger, it spells danger. And that's exactly what happens on the roads today. I see anger displayed to an excessive degree on our roads today by drivers that believe that they were slighted or cut off or whatever. And you know, many of the accidents that happen have anger as one of the ingredients.
Yeah. Comment on the, thank you, Clay. Thank you so much. Comment on that, Ryan?
Yeah, I very much agree and share the concerns of the caller. I think we're seeing, I think we've got some evidence from around the country, too, that we're seeing real spikes in what we call driving anger, or most people call road rage. I think a couple things I'd say is that the driving is really sort of the perfect situation for creating an angry response. There's so much about driving that ends up leading to anger. It's the fact that you're on your way someplace, so your goals can be blocked. The behavior of others is sort of you're getting there as contingent on the behavior of others. It's dangerous, as the caller alluded to, and so you might be a little bit more tense when you're in those situations. Just a lot going on there that leads to anger. The other thing I would say is that even though I do believe in most contexts anger can be productive and there are healthy ways of expressing it and dealing with it, I do think that anger on the road is particularly insidious and dangerous. In the ways that the caller described, that it can lead to aggression, right? I mean, people use their cars as weapons. They shoot at each other. They get out of the car and fight. They do all sorts of things. But also just some indirect problems. So when people are angry, they drive more dangerously. They make more mistakes. They run lights. They do things that are just risky. And so, you know, I do think that anger is one place where it is probably in everyone's best interest to try and find ways to relax and calm down, or even pull over if you need to.
Clay, thank you very much for calling. Karen in Madison will give you a chance. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to say that when I was growing up, I was told if I didn't, I was shy, if I had to smile or else I wouldn't have any friends. And so I never really learned what it even felt like to be angry. And therefore, that got me in trouble because I would maybe get mad at somebody and take it out on someone else. So I had to be taught that, you know, you have to learn what anger feels like, and then from there you can learn to control it.
Karen, thank you. Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, we send very inconsistent messages to children about emotions and the healthiness of those emotions. And I think this might be an example of that. That, you know, we sort of send the message, hey, it's not okay to feel particular ways. Sometimes we do that overtly, but a lot of times we do that unintentionally. We send those messages, right? So when kids get in trouble for being angry, instead of helping them learn to channel that anger into a healthy, productive response, we oftentimes just scold them for their anger. And so we send messages like the caller received, which is you got to be smiling and you got to be happy all the time. It's far better to learn to teach children to process those emotions, to talk about them, to feel them, and then come up with healthy ways of expressing them. And I think we haven't historically done a great job of that. It's also worth noting that I think there are considerable gender differences and race differences when it comes to how people are rewarded and or punished for how they express their emotions. And so we know, for instance, that boys and men are more likely to be rewarded for expressing their anger outwardly. Girls and women are more likely to be punished for expressing their anger that way. And that continues into adulthood. And so that's part of the inconsistency of those messages we send.
Karen, thank you again for calling. I want to give Nan in Hartford a chance to join in. Hi, Nan.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I would like your guest to speak about anger in relation to domestic abuse.
Nan, thank you. Go ahead. Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, so I'd start by saying domestic abuse happens for a great many reasons, right? And so we know that there are lots and lots of causes of domestic abuse. However, one of those is, of course, anger and temper. I wouldn't be prepared to say that it's the primary cause, though it is certainly relevant. My gut tells me that in a lot of cases, the anger that we see that leads to domestic violence or any kind of family violence is associated with potentially desires to control the people around them. And so that anger is oftentimes used as a mechanism by which you might be able to control another person. I think it also sometimes can come from a place of jealousy. Or some other emotion. But ultimately, I think one way, and this happens outside of the context of family violence as well, is that people will use their temper as a means of controlling people around them, not just family, but maybe coworkers and so on. Meaning, if people are scared of my temper, then they won't cross me, right? They won't do anything interfere with my goals or my desires. And so I'm essentially using my temper as a means of keeping them at bay or keeping them doing what I want them to do. And that's obviously not a healthy relationship dynamic in any relationship.
Yeah, I was thinking the military. there's anger if you don't do what you're told to do when you're in the military. But it seems to work there, or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super prepared to speak to how anger might be used in the military in particular, but I can see how it is a place where, I mean, again, if the goal is control, and perhaps as an environment where that's the dynamic they're looking for, then anger could be used that way. I mean, I think typically this is an approach that supervisors will use with their employees, and it may end up working, quote unquote, in the short run, but ultimately it leads to such dissatisfaction that employees won't stick around or stay for that.
Yeah. Nan, thanks again. Therese in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Therese.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I had a couple comments, and then I'd like to hear your guests' thoughts on this. First of all, I want to echo what that other lady was saying about not knowing what we were feeling, and that I was raised to be a smiley girl because nice girls don't get mad. And so I learned to stuff all my feelings, and then I eventually became addicted to alcohol, and I sobered up 42 years ago. But in the process of that, I learned that if I didn't learn how to express my anger, I just figured I would get drunk again because that was the best way I knew how to express myself. And so fortunately, I went to therapy, learned how to recognize my anger, and then learned how to express it. The other part is that I believe there's a connection between sadness and anger, and there's a therapy called tapping. And I tried it one time about being really mad about something. And as I worked through this tapping exercise, what I learned was that the anger I felt towards this person was really a profound sadness for the loss of that relationship. And I'm wondering if you could give comments regarding sadness and anger.
Therese, thank you. Ryan?
Yeah, I just start by saying appreciate the additional validation over that initial point about kind of the messages we get when we're growing up and the danger there. And also, I want to comment too on the substance abuse piece. That is absolutely, I know I mentioned it earlier as a potential consequence, it's absolutely a common consequence of of not knowing how to experience and express anger and other emotions effectively. People sometimes turn to substances, not just alcohol, but other nicotine, other substances as well, as a mechanism to cope with those maladaptive feelings or those emotions that they don't like very much. Regarding the question about sadness and anger, I think one of the things that's really important for people to hear is that, and the caller alluded to this, anger and no emotion really happens in a vacuum. we experience lots of things at the same time. And I think some of the danger, some of the disservice maybe psychologists have done historically is when we talk about these things as separate, we fail to sort of point that out to people. And the caller is absolutely right that when you're feeling angry, you might also be feeling sad or scared or jealous. It's even, frankly, possible to feel angry and happy at the same time, right? You know, a friend gets a job you really wanted. You can be happy for that friend and angry that you didn't get it. And so emotions occur in lots of contexts, and there's a lot of nuance there. Part of the reason that happens is because when you think about why we feel things, a lot of it has to do with our interpretation of things. And so when we get angry, sometimes we're getting angry over things like loss. Sometimes we're getting angry over, or feeling like we deserved something we didn't get. And that ends up, there are lots of feelings that can stem from those perspectives, right? If I've lost something, it makes sense that I might be sad and angry. If I didn't get something I thought I was going to get, it makes sense that I would both feel sad and angry. The part of processing our emotions is learning to process both of those things.
Therese, thank you again. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Mark in Lansing, Iowa. Mark, thank you for calling.
I just wanted to point out that anger is an emotion, but way too often the behavior that either is attached to it or has always been a part of it is considered primary, when in fact a person can easily feel angry and not be elevated in their tone of voice, not become violent. So behavior is one thing and an emotional feeling state is another. The thing about emotional fluency is that I think that a lot of our society is relatively not fluent in enough of what there is for variability in emotions. And so there is a thing called righteous indignation. That's not necessarily anger. There's a lot of precursor. We've heard people talking about the precursor or the tangential feelings that are coming on. And maybe those are the primary feelings, but because our emotional fluency is so paltry, we don't really know how to call things out accurately. So we call a lot of things by the name of anger, which really are not even accurate labels. There is another question that I think that we need to bring to this in terms of the world of psychology is that the psychology oftentimes thinks that there's nothing but this internal process going on for the person, when in fact the person is inside of a system. And so behaviors that are manifest inside of systems, when the systems themselves are causatory, we really have to work on fixing systems if we want to fix behavior.
Mark, thank you very much for calling. Ryan, comments?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. So very much agree. I think what the caller referred to as emotional fluency, I've been thinking of or describing as emotional literacy, right? Our ability to understand and talk about emotions. And it's I very much agree with the caller that there's a real deficit there in our capacity to understand those things. Psychologists do, I think, own some of that, and that we don't always talk about some of these concepts in the same way. And so we haven't always done a nice job of providing that opportunity for emotional literacy. I also think that there's so many, just this week, I posted something about emotional labor on my Instagram, And one of the things I heard in response is a lot of people saying, well, that's not how I define it. And so, there's just a lot of different definitions of things out there. We haven't, we need to work on trying to make that a little bit more clear. As far as the final comment about systems and emotions occurring in a system, yes, very, very much agree. And the importance about changing those symptoms is quite accurate. I do think that many psychologists see that and get that. And maybe historically, psychologists haven't been very good about recognizing that. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think psychologists very much understand now the role that the system plays in leading to emotions and the behaviors that sometimes stem from those emotions.
Thanks again very much for calling. In your, by the way, I think we have links on our webpage to your book and your Instagrams and other things. If we don't, we'll put those up today because I took a look and there's a lot of really good information there for us to sort of digest as we go along here. We have our guest, Ryan Martin, is a professor of psychology, a dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW Green Bay. I think we lost our network connection. Ryan, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I can hear you.
As long as you can hear me, we're good. a situation, I wanted to get at least one. Let's say you've got somebody angry with you at work.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you get that done or whatever?
Yep.
What's your how should we respond?
Yeah, great question. So one of the things I encourage people to do is to actually take a moment to sort of map out and think about why the person is angry with you from their perspective. So what is it that they think you did? How are they interpreting what you did? Thinking about it from that perspective. And the reason I say that is, for starters, I think it can be a valuable empathy exercise to pay attention to that. But actually the better reason is that it gives you a sense of how to intervene. Meaning if the person's angry because of a misunderstanding, you might be able to correct that misunderstanding. If they're angry not because of a misunderstanding, but because you really did do something wrong, this helps you figure out how to repair that damage, right? It helps you figure out what you did wrong and how you can intervene from that perspective. I also think it's worth noting, and this goes back actually to the last caller's comment, is we can or should be able to separate out how they're feeling from what they're saying and doing. And meaning they might be right to be angry with us. Let's say I screw up at work and someone is mad at me for that. They might be right to be angry with me, but that doesn't necessarily justify how they're treating me. And if we can sort of separate those things out, and it allows us to have the conversation of, you are correct that I made a mistake. However, and I will remedy that mistake. However, talking to me the way you did or doing what you did in response to that isn't okay with me. And so we can have sort of a nuanced look at it, but it really comes from being willing to do that deep dive into better understanding the interaction.
And controlling our anger or being able to deal with anger is a good way to have some peace in your own life.
Absolutely. I talk to so many people who feel relatively tortured by their anger, right? It doesn't feel good to people sometimes, and they get scared about the consequences of having lost their cool and so on. And so taking some time to be able to manage that productively and think through it productively, and frankly, even feel better about the times they are angry when they are justifiably angry, all of those things can bring people a lot of peace.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you today, Ryan. As I said, well, your book, Why We Get Mad and How to Use Your Anger for Positive Change, we'll put some links up on our page today for people to be able to explore this further. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but there are a lot of people that are dealing with anger in one way or another, and hopefully we can talk with you again. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
I would love to. Thanks so much.
Ryan Martin, professor and also dean for the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Of course, he's a professor of psychology as well, and it was great to have him with us. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's kind of the way it sometimes works on the show. Just looking ahead, tomorrow on the show, we'll be talking about some common gastrointestinal diseases. A doctor will be here to help you figure out why your stomach might ache. Plus, we'll get an update on what you need to know about COVID and booster shots. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thank you for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.